Good evening, this is Mae Brussel. The title of this program is World Watchers, and it is broadcast number 777, October the 27th, 1986. There was a column in the San Francisco Chronicle by a journalist from Paris. I've quoted him before, William Pfaff, P-F-A-F-F, and the article is titled Ronald Reagan's Private War. And he asked the question in this story, what is there's so much fuss about whether Eugene Haasen first worked for the CIA when he was shot down in Nicaragua. There's no doubt about the fact that this government, our government, wants a war there, that the Contras war is part of the U.S. government policy, that the funds are provided, if not by us, by countries that want our U.S. aid program, and that we have intended to keep this surreptitious war going until, well, as we know, this past week, $100 million was signed for the Contras for military aid to begin fighting above board. They don't have to hide their funding anymore. In this article, he mentions, interestingly enough, he said 39 years ago in September 1949, an unmarked American plane took off from West Germany to drop supplies to a Ukrainian partisan force. This launched a three-year Anglo-American program to develop anti-communist resistance movements in the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe in preparation for a war which officials feared was inevitable. It's interesting that he dates this 1949 because the intent to make war, the inevitable war against the Soviet Union, actually began with plans laid down in 1943 with Mr. Wild Bill Donovan and Alan Dulles of the OSS. And starting in 1945, the Cold War operations began, and that is the reason for all of these small wars we have all over the world to try to take control of native populations and minerals and resources before the inevitable war against the Soviet Union begins. He describes some of our little private wars that the CIA has conducted, and then says that Ronald Reagan should think clearly that he's in defiance of Congress and public opinion, and that his policies and private forces wars won't work, and that ultimately he uses the word down that road lies impeachment, that we are a government of law, and they have broken the law. The law being that they were not supposed to be supplying military aid until officially it became kosher just this week that they could go ahead and do it. But everyone working with the Nicaraguans in Congress, out of Congress, most people who read a newspaper know that we've been supplying arms for this activity for the past 5 years. Now, the reality is that we are not a government of law. He is lying, and he knows he is lying. The best example of lawbreaking is blowing off the brains and head of the elected president of the United States in Dallas in 1963. He uses the word impeachment and Reagan's private war. And if I have to say it every week, I'll remind you again every week that George Bush, Killer Bush, is the man closest related to Mr. Haasenfuss and the Contras and what is going on down there. And as CIA director, he was the one in charge of that agency at the time. Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffitt were murdered in Washington, D.C., blown up on Embassy Row, Letelier being the Chilean ambassador to the United States when Salvador Allende was alive. And then a few months later, George Bush was CIA director still when Air Cuba was blown up and the CIA was responsible for that airplane. So to think that the anxiety of making war against Russia only lasted 3 years and started in 1949 is wrong. To identify Ronald Reagan with the war is wrong. George Bush should be impeached first, or it should be Reagan-Bush war, because they are both involved, and it would be very convenient if somebody in the CIA or the powers that be were spreading these rumors and articles from Europe or in the United States to impeach Ronald Reagan and didn't include the name of George Bush. I didn't mention World Watchers program last week the death of the president of Mozambique. It was covered pretty well in most of the newspaper accounts, and there are a lot of interesting articles that followed. 1 month prior to his death, or actually 3 weeks before, printed in The Guardian and sent to me by a World Watcher, and I thank you for those magazines you send to me, was an article telling about the problems of Mozambique, that 4 million people were facing starvation, and the starvation was due mostly to the South African nation which was sponsoring the MNR forces, breaking up the agricultural marketing network. The weather alone wasn't the responsibility for so many people dying. It was the support of South Africa to break up the farms and the food supplies for the native population of Mozambique. They had a 1.8 million group of people in March that were starving, and right now in October, 3.9 million. And the article from The Guardian blamed the persons from South Africa who kept feeding weapons and so forth into this group that want to overthrow the Marxists and turn it into a southern part of right next to South Africa. We would do to that country what we did to Grenada, remove the people trying to get control of their own lives and put it in the hands of some very good fascist neighbors. The Washington Post had a story 10 days before the death of the president telling him about a meeting between leaders of South African countries, Mozambique, Botswana, Angola, Tanzania, Zambia, and Zimbabwe, because there was a border skirmish on the border of South Africa and Mozambique, where six South African soldiers were killed. And that was the excuse to invade and take over with forces and army and commando units parts of Mozambique. And the Mozambique official said that story is entirely fabricated. It is played up and manipulated by the regime's propaganda, and it is the pretext for launching direct aggression against our country. With these ridiculous pretexts, the South African warmongers are preparing direct attacks on our country and the city of Maputo by the South African armed forces. And that provocation is similar to the one named in the Christic Institute lawsuit against persons of our Central Intelligence Agency, saying that they intended to murder the president of the U.S. ambassador to Costa Rica, blame it on the Sandinistas, and his murder would be the pretext for invading that country. Well, in this case, six South Africans were killed, and they said this is the pretext for sending in your troops. The Washington Times had a story 2 days later. Mozambique admits the rebels control the north, and it tells about troops moving into part of their country, that they were losing ground. They lost control of three more towns that fell to troops that were supplied by the South African army. And just prior to the murder of the president for the past 2 months, there have been articles with nothing but trouble. I don't have to share all of them with you, but I think you get the idea. And then the story of October 21st, Mozambique official confirms that President Michel was killed in a plane crash, and they described him as charismatic leader, and he was Mozambique's single greatest asset. Of course he was, or they wouldn't bother killing him. Then the Washington Post falls with a story. The ones that follow afterwards are just so ridiculous. Mozambique chief's death clouds the future of the country. Well, two-thirds of the country, or one-third, are starving to death. The food is cut off. South Africa is sending forces to take over, so you have a pretty good idea what's going to happen to the country. Wall Street Journal had a story October 21st. Mozambique's foes are helped by the president's death. Well, of course his foes are helped by his death. When he's murdered, then the people that didn't like him had something to gain. Otherwise, they wouldn't bother murdering him. And they act like it's so original to say that when the plane crash took place, then the enemies of Samora Machel were able to step up their efforts to topple the government that he led. That was the whole idea about killing him, is to speed up your energy to take over the government. And then there were protests in other countries, in Zimbabwe. Mobs protest in belief that the South Africans are linked to Michelle's death. And another story on October 22nd, San Francisco Chronicle. Accusations begin an African crash. Investigators were sent from South Africa, the people named as being responsible for the murder. Investigators from Mozambique, and then the Soviet Union asked to probe the crash because it was a Marxist country, and this was a direct blow to another third world nation trying to get their act together. There was an editorial in the Los Angeles Times by William Minter. He's an editor of the African News Service. And he said President Samora Machel's death is a painful thing to this country. He said many of you in other countries don't know who he is, but in South Africa, he is linked to the likes of John Kennedy and Martin Luther King and millions elsewhere who know of Africa, and their vibrant revolutionary statesmen say that he was one of the continent's modern heroes. And so it goes. Another hero, another peacemaker, another person trying to help the Third World get along was slain in a plane crash. Now, on the wire services and the television, there were a few segments of information about experiments done on Americans. And just in case you haven't seen all of them, I wanted to run down a few parts of an article, a long article from San Francisco Chronicle, United States Used the Sick and Elderly in Radiation Experiments. This was October 25th, the story. Washington sources revealed that federal agencies have been conducting a series of experiments of radiation exposure for 30 years, from 1945 to 1979. This included injecting people with plutonium, radium, uranium. The environmental contamination was thousands of times worse than in the Three Mile Island accident in Pennsylvania in 1979 and was closer to the amount of the radioactive iodine released from Chernobyl in the Soviet Union this spring. Adults were fed radioactive uranium and manganese spheres at the Los Alamos Scientific Laboratory. Adults were fed radium and thorium at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. People diagnosed as terminally ill were injected with plutonium as part of a project. Experiments were carried out at hospitals in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, Rochester, New York, Chicago, San Francisco. Patients with good kidney function were injected with uranium salts at the University of Rochester. One of those was hallucinatory, another emotionally disturbed, another was homeless. They didn't have a home, so they were taken into a hospital and given uranium. Inmates in Oregon and Washington State got x-rays to their testicles from 1963 to 1971. Now, this is interesting for a lot of reasons. One is that Adolf Hitler was experimenting with radiation to testicles the last year or 2 years of the war, and they had people standing in line waiting for food or the equivalent of a food stamp, permission to buy bread and whatever, and they had the x-rays aimed at the testicles to see if they could make people sterile. There is a lot of discussion about sterility, frozen embryo. There was a baby born just today from a frozen embryo. A lot of people who can't have children, and by making them unable to have children, if you could get these experiments going really well, then you could make them get pregnant by the super babies or those special babies that were created by Joseph Mengele and the scientists in Germany. Otherwise, why would the United States worry about radiation on testicles from 1963 to 71? This article goes on. Brain tumor patients at the Massachusetts General Hospital, comatose or semi-comatose, were injected with uranium. Massachusetts General. I think of Drs. Mark and Irvin and Sweet and Dr. Leonard Keeley and the experiments that have gone on in Boston, Massachusetts, for mind control under the knife, the needle, and so forth. Radioactive iodine was deliberately released seven times at the Atomic Energy Commission National Reactor Testing Station in Idaho. Deliberately released. Did they deliberately release the radiation in Germany at the nuclear plant simultaneously with Chernobyl so that it would ensure more problems of radiation that later could be blamed on the Russians? The article continues. I just injected that it wasn't in the article. That was an opinion based upon past broadcasts I've done on Chernobyl. This article continues. People were exposed to beta rays at Clinton Laboratory in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. People were fed real fallout from a Nevada test site, simulated particles containing strontium, barium, cesium, or solutions of cesium and strontium from 1961 to 1963 at the University of Chicago, terminal cancer patients at Columbia University, Montefiore Hospital in the Bronx were injected with radioactive calcium and strontium. Subjects were injected with or drank radioactive promethium at the Hanford Environmental Health Foundation and Battelle Memorial Institute in Richland, Washington. People were injected with radioactive phosphorus or fed Columbia River fish contaminated with radioactive spheres. That's just a sample of what has been going on inside the United States with persons not knowing at all being experimented upon in hospitals where they are there either to get well or to die in peace. They're used as experiments or even on the homeless. Now, changing another subject, and one I want to continue on one that I brought up last, it seems like a long time ago. It was October, the first week of this month, October the 6th. I asked a question on World Watch's program number 774, has World War III begun? And I mentioned the Chernobyl disaster, which I believe from all I've seen was a sabotaged affair to blame the Soviet Union for these events. And the same kind of people we dropped by parachute inside of the Ukraine and inside of the Soviet Union to instigate or promote the World War III that so many people seem to want could be done by those kinds of persons. The Chernobyl disaster, I believe, was a purposeful event of sabotage. But I listed the Chernobyl disaster in May of 86, the Soviet ship sinking in the Black Sea in September the 2nd, a missile test in April of 1986 that didn't go off. There was an explosion after leaving the silo. A second Soviet missile test that was a mishap that set them back. And then a fire that hit the nuclear submarine off Bermuda. Now, there are two more events that have happened since I talked about them 3 weeks ago. One was an article about a plane crash October the 17th in Moscow. Still pretty much a secret, a passenger plane that caught fire 560 miles northeast of Moscow. It left the sky for Moscow, and the passenger crew, the navigator, the mechanic died. The plane's captain and co-pilot were seriously injured, and they gave no details about how many of the passengers of the 76 that have been hurt or died. They're very secretive about those things. But the Soviet Union had another happening that is not accountable for any scientific reasons, and that has to do with the station down in Antarctica, the research station. The New York Times had a story October 15th, Soviet Antarctic Research Station is lost in Iceland. One of the Soviet Union's Antarctic research stations that was about to be occupied again for the annual summer season has vanished. The disappearance was disclosed October the 5th in the Izvestia, the government newspaper, that said a huge chunk of ice sheet along the Antarctic coast had broken off, apparently carrying with it the temporarily unoccupied station, the scientific station. The unusual event, which they couldn't account for, apparently again, this is the second apparently in one article, became known through analysis of space imagery transmitted by the satellites. It affected 7,500 square miles at the seaward edge of the Filchner Ice Shelf on the Weddell Sea coast, the ice shelf named after Wilhelm Filchner, a German explorer. It is common for floating shelf ice, which begins on land and extends out to the sea, to break off from time to time, giving rise to icebergs. But the latest calving, they refer to it as a calving, as the process is known, was of unusual magnitude. Fragments as large as 60 miles were broken off, and Izvestia, in providing details of the latest incident, said that the satellite showed no trace of the space station, the seasonal station that they use. They didn't specify when it broke off. It is used annually during the Antarctic summer season from December to February, which will be coming in 2 months. It was established in 1976-77 and usually has a crew of 170 people that moved down there in December. The word of the apparent disappearance of the base with its mothballed living quarters, equipment, fuel supplies came in the Soviet Union. They reported a strip of ice 60 miles wide, 120 miles long, broke off from the Filchner ice shell, and that is their space station. The purpose of the station was to prospect for oil and gas in the area. They said Izvestia told the Soviet Union had displayed growing interest in mineral resources of the Antarctic and the Weddell Sea, an ice-choked bay off the South Atlantic. A 10-mile-wide zone of clear water had appeared between the Antarctic continent and the detached portion of the ice. We are unable to tell you what happened to the station, but the station is gone. Now, I'm wondering, there have been a lot of articles on the ozone hole in the Antarctica. There was one in the People's Daily World, and I have a lot of articles on that. This is titled, Ozone Hole in Antarctica Raises Alarming Questions. Scientists were to hold an extraordinary news conference about this alarming hole in the atmospheric ozone because the sun can break through and affect the atmosphere. And there have been a lot of studies on why there is this hole and what is causing it. DuPont Company, the world's largest producer of gases, has opposed any limit to their production, and it has been suggested that maybe the production of various factors, chlorine and so forth, was affecting the ozone. I'm wondering if there was any way to open that up for the ultraviolet sunlight reaching the surface down there at Antarctica that would cause this segment of the ice to spin off. I know there are some very good scientists that listen to World Watchers, and I'd like your opinion on it. Is it possible to open up a space like that that would cause this huge station, the scientific station that the Soviet Union has used since 1976, to float off into the ocean? They don't know what caused it. Is it possible that a hole in the ozone in that particular area over Antarctica could do this? I suppose most of you saw several weeks ago that the first U.S. cruise missiles have been deployed in West Germany. I'm sure you feel very safe with the cruise nuclear missiles now deployed. This is something that Ronald Reagan wanted, and we didn't mind giving to him. In the Bay Area, two people involved in the Patty Hearst kidnapping are running for elections in San Mateo. One is Jim Browning, a prosecutor. I believe he was put in as a judge at the time, or as a prosecutor, by Richard Nixon, and he was the one who chased Patty Hearst around instead of the CIA people involved in the SLA. But the interesting thing is Charles Bates, the FBI man, who was responsible for the FBI-CIA connections to the Patty Hearst case, is now running for an office as a hospital district director. Can you imagine having an FBI director over a case where a woman was drugged and poisoned, kept like a zombie, and kidnapped, and all that is covered up by him? Can you imagine the hanky-panky, the potential for hanky-panky at a hospital? Where's the hospital director? I just read to you what some of our hospitals do to people in prisons as private citizens, people in comas or kidney problems, and Mr. Bates wants to be in charge of this hospital in the Bay Area. He lost a race for San Mateo County Sheriff 4 years ago, so he decided that he would get a hospital job, and the San Francisco Chronicle said, now a private investigator, Mr. Bates is a consultant. He has not kept on top of hospital district issues, but he emphasizes his experience as an FBI administrator would help him in the hospital. Heaven help us if you make a connection of the terrible fiery deaths that the SLA went through unnecessarily and the drugging and raping of Patty Hearst and the shenanigans from the Defense Department on down to the local police, and now he wants a position in a hospital here in our area. All of you, of course, on a national basis saw the story that Edwin Meese says the Supreme Court rulings are not the law of the land. Now, Mr. Gorbachev had a statement out of the Soviet Union this past week. He asked a question, and I think I'll make a tape for him and send it to him. Many of you have heard the answer to his question on World Watchers over and over again. The title of the story that was covered in the Bay Area here was, Gorbachev wonders who sets United States policy. Mikhail Gorbachev questioned whether United States policy is set by Ronald Reagan or his staff, which he says hates the Soviet Union. In Washington, Reagan directed U.S. negotiators to propose some more sharp reductions in nuclear weapons while he places nuclear weapons in Europe. But Mr. Gorbachev is asking the question, who sets the policy? And that is a question that every American should be asking, because there is a group in Europe we used to call them the Politburo in the Soviet Union. And you see Admiral Poindexter and Donald Reagan, the head of Merrill Lynch, the banking house that was directly linked to Tommaso Buscetta, and the not only the mozzarella cheese cover for organized crime drug traffic, but with links to San Paulo, Brazil, to Klaus Barbie, Joseph Mengele, and that group of characters, as well as the Palermo Mafia in Sicily. I throw these names around, but the people that run this country are Donald Reagan, the front people, and Admiral Poindexter, and George Shultz, and Caspar Weinberger, and Larry Speaks. Now, Larry Speaks, I understand, as of today's news, is getting ready to work for Donald Reagan at Merrill Lynch, when Ronald Reagan's administration is over, and he's doing all the right things, and he will be assured a job at one of the top broker houses in the United States. But a good question is, who sets the policy? And he believes that the president, he thinks too much of Ronald Reagan, is doing things he wouldn't do otherwise. He wants to know who runs the policy. And I will write him a letter about Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger and Kissinger Associates and the links of them to Martin Bormann and the banking houses that sat in 1943 and decided we'll wage war against the Soviet Union by doing this and the so, and then ending World War II while they immediately set up the organizations for war against Russia. Those are the people, the Permandex Group, that are described in the Torbett documents, or the British American Canadian Corporation, described in The Last Hero, the book on Wild Bill Donovan. I may make a one-hour tape and see if I can mail it to Mr. Gorbachev on who sets U.S. policy. He said, what kind of government is it, and what can be expected from it in other areas of international relations? How far will its unpredictability go? But Mr. Gorbachev should know that if he can't predict it, that's his problem. The KGB, like the Mossad, are supposed to have very good intelligence. And if simple old May Brussel can sit out and figure the next moves in the next countries that they're going to do and watch it come down, it seems to me that they would be more astute before they even sat and talked to him. There's another story in the LA Times. White House hawks rule the U.S. arms policy. And this is part of the same speech he gave. He said that he feels that he's unable to deal with Ronald Reagan because Reagan is not willing or not able himself to control the Hawks administration. Either the president is unable to cope with his entourage, which literally breeds hatred for the Soviet Union and everything that may lead to international affairs of a calm channel, or he himself wants that. And I think he himself means the man who was governor from 1966 to 1974, the man who worked with Otto von Bolschring and Helene von Damm, the man who set up with the aerospace industries with Mr. Getty and the Galen Network in the United States, the whole outfit of the Reinhard Galen Nazi clique, and the San Francisco Sacramento group around Reagan that took him directly to Edward Teller in 1966 when he became governor. And they were already working on the Star Wars First Strike project against Russia. Edward Teller, the father of the hydrogen bomb, was licking his chops for World War III. Reagan is not led by those people. He himself wants what is happening, and he has selected them and is very happy with them. There was another article this past week, Scope of Actions of the United States Baffles the Analysts. Why are they removing such as the 55 Soviet diplomats? What is the war going on there? And the LA Times had an article that the United States policies have the Soviet Union tossing their heads, and other people are literally at a loss for words. And the article says, why, allowing for the need to answer Moscow's expulsion of five, did we retaliate so disproportionate? What is going on? What is the long-term effect of this? And a lot of good questions are asked on what it got in the mind of Ronald Reagan. Now, Representative Henry Gonzalez of Texas had a press conference in Washington, and he said Representative Gonzalez wants an investigation of the CIA paramilitary actions. This was as soon as the plane went down in Nicaragua. And he said there were two airplane crashes. There was a civilian cargo plane that crashed at a Texas military base on Saturday, and it was on a secret CIA mission carrying weapons to the American-backed rebels in Nicaragua. Three civilians were killed in that crash. A smaller plane the Nicaraguan government claimed soldiers shot down near the Costa Rican border, of course, is more known. That was a CIA mission sent out by the CIA. And Representative Gonzalez said that under the authorization granted to the CIA in 1947, there is nothing to allow them to operate as a paramilitary operation. The pilots were hired to fly aircraft for civilian companies contracted by the CIA carrying out missions. And this is an example, these two crashes that took place recently, and we haven't heard much about the Texas airplane crash, that we're CIA and we are conducting these operations. There's nothing that says we should be doing them. And this is the same Henry Gonzalez who in 1983 wanted to know if the State Department was leased to Henry Kissinger, who he referred to as a hired gun, and Kissinger, of course, is in charge of Central American policy. Henry Kissinger is out here campaigning for Ed Schau, hoping he'll take the place of Senator Cranston, and he and Gerald Ford of the Warren Commission were out here a few years ago campaigning for Pete Wilson, who got into the Senate, and Kissinger is working hard to stack the Senate with people of his own kind so he can continue both the Star Wars for his mentor Fritz Kramer and his associate Daniel Graham and continue the CIA operations to get rid of the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. I'm going to take a one-minute break and go back on a few more problems of the Kissinger associates related to the question Mr. Gorbachev asked, who rules America, and then get into some serious problems with Israel. I will not do the Nicaragua story until next week. I want to do several hours of that uninterrupted, but I wanted to update with you some of these articles first. So we'll just take, as I say, a one-minute break and then get back to some of these other very important stories.